given the fact that this text, the Living in Love and Faith document, it's subheaded Christian Teaching and Learning about Identity, Sexuality, Relationships, and Marriage, considering the fact that this text is at the center of the controversy, I felt that I should go and get it and read it. All I should add, 450 pages of it. There's a lot to it. But the most important thing about it is recognizing that the word muddled, as in muddled message, is exactly what is demonstrated in this document. And there is a particular pattern to which I want to draw attention. It is the way that some people try to present clear Christian truth as if there is an equally authoritative or alternative vision to it. So it says, on the one hand, this is what some say. On the other hand, this is what others say, as if they are biblically equivalent arguments. Even the way the document begins sets it up for disaster, because the introduction, which is addressed as a welcome, tells the reader that the reader may be one of two kinds of persons, both of whom are invited to receive this document to think about it. For example, if you're someone who likes to start, says the document, by thinking about life and God and how it is that the church is the way it is, then part one, they say, should be your starting point. Quote, or you may be someone who likes to start by taking a good look at the world we find ourselves in. Just head for part two, says the introduction. Quote, maybe you are the kind of person who wants to make sense of things first from the perspective of faith. Part three is where such readers should start. But let's just note, as Christians, we need to understand clearly. We start with Scripture. We start with theology. We turn to everything else secondarily. If we invite people to start somewhere else, well, don't be surprised when this ends up in disaster. And that's exactly where this document ends up. Now, it doesn't end up there in a conclusive way by denying biblical orthodoxy. It merely, as if you could say merely, subverts biblical orthodoxy by saying, look, this is what the church has taught. There's some people who believe this. This is what people believe the church teaches, what the Bible reveals. But then there are others who believe otherwise, and they should have an equal voice in this as well. The on the one hand, on the other hand approach undertaken in this document becomes very clear by the time you get to page 256, for example. At the top of the page, we read this, quote, some of us maintain, in line with the Church of England's teaching in this area, that marriage between a man and a woman, held together by promises before God and the wider community, is the only proper context for a sexual relationship, end quote. Now, you'll notice that this is the official teaching of the Church of England. The sentence actually says that, but the document by the Church of England is actually addressed as some of us maintain, as if it just states from the very beginning that in the Church of England, there are those who do not believe in the doctrine and teaching of the Church of England and those who want to change it. So some of us, according to this document, believe in what we'll just summarize as the Church of England's historic affirmation of a biblical definition of marriage. But then we read on the same page, the very next paragraph, quote, some of us say that the critical point in a relationship is where the couple have committed themselves to the lifelong relationship of marriage, and that this promise to be with and for each other and for whatever children come from their union is the point at which sexual intercourse becomes a fully responsible action of love, end quote. In other words, sex outside of marriage, that's okay, some of us think. But the two sums of us thus far aren't the extent of the sums of us. By the time you get to a couple of pages later, there's a third, quote, some of us hold that a faithful commitment can take other forms than marriage, and that there are many people who in other ways have made a commitment to live together as a couple that the church can recognize as good, while at the same time also inviting them to take a further step to confirm their commitment before God and the community, end quote. This is the third group of some of us. We're moving to the left with every stage. But that's not all. There is a fourth some of us, just on the very same page now, quote, some of us say that sexual activity belongs as appropriately to same-sex as it does to opposite-sex relationships, whether we think that means within a same-sex marriage or within the relationships of those who have committed themselves to marriage or within other patterns of faithful commitment, end quote. Now, let's just state the obvious. Once you accept that some of us, and by this you mean one church, includes all four of these positions, and after you're at least honest enough to say that only the first position is actually the official teaching of the church, you've actually offered three alternatives to a singular orthodoxy. You can see where this is going. Now, as we step back a moment, let's recognize it's theologically illegitimate for any church to acknowledge that this is the church's historic position. And yes, There's even an acknowledgement that it is basically the position sustained by a plain reading of Scripture. But then there are alternatives. And actually, the way it's set up with the some of us, some of us, some of us, some of us, it appears just by implication that there are more some of us who don't believe the church's historic position based on Scripture than those who do. Now, there is a sense in which the very polity and historical context of the Church of England even began with the tension between the some of us and the some of us. There have been different parties within the Church of England for some time. That's one of the dangers of being a state church in what is known in Britain as an Erastian system. It's all-inclusive, and all-inclusive eventually means all-inclusive. Some of us, others of us, still others of us, you just continue down the list. But I want us to note two other dimensions of this. One is the fact that this is a halfway house somewhere. This document that has been released is not just intended as a period piece in order to document what some of us think and others of us think. No, it is intended, as the document says, to advance the discussion. The discussion is going somewhere. Where will the discussion go? Well, I will state this, and I don't claim to be a prophet. You don't have to be a prophet. The setup here is to change the teaching of the Church of England away from its historic position based in Scripture to something else. That's the second observation. The third observation is this. When you look at this, the some of us, some of us, some of us, some of us, by the time you look at these four alternatives, just on the question as to whether marriage is the union of a man or a woman and the only arena for legitimate sexual expression, when you look at the some of us versus the some of us, some of us, some of us, what does that mean? Well, by the time you look at the beginning and the end, these are two irreconcilable positions. The church will officially have an official teaching. It has one now, but the church has been subverting it, and even its House of Bishops has been subverting it, thus the protest from St. Helen's Bishopsgate. But furthermore, it has a position in actuality which is very different from its position in doctrine. But that's not going to last. That's not tenable. And we're also looking at the fact that Britain is a very liberal society in social ethics, and thus the demand is that the Church of England is going to have to get with the program, join the sexual revolution, recognize and perform same-sex unions, ordain openly gay clergy. You go down the entire list, and pretty soon you can end up where this is going. This is headed headlong into disaster. Where will conservative, evangelical, Orthodox Christians in the Church of England be left? They're going to be left out in the cold. What will churches like St. Helen's Bishopsgate do? Well, we don't know, but we do know this. Right now, we can and should pray for them and be thankful for their conviction and for their example. And in this predicament, the Church of England is not alone. Any church, any congregation, any denomination, any Christian institution that does not clearly, stalwartly, unreservedly affirm the plain teaching and plain reading of Scripture on these issues is going to succumb and succumb quickly to the moral revolutionaries. The surrender will be fast in this context, and it will be total. And the pressure is coming from every side. Just consider where we began, a news story in the Washington Post and a story on the front page of the sports section of USA Today. And then we turn to a courageous evangelical congregation in the ancient and historic city of London. And then we are reminded of a very important truth. Truth may be lonely, but truth, even lonely, remains true.